You're listening to the Bitcoin.com podcast. Our guest today is Danish Chowdhury, Managing Director of the Bitcoin.com Exchange. This episode is brought to you by the Bitcoin.com Exchange, the exchange you can trust. Buy and sell Bitcoin as well as 250 digital assets. The Bitcoin.com Exchange is secure, fast, easy, and reliable. Register within seconds and buy crypto with a credit or debit card. Join our community of traders now. Exchange.bitcoin.com. I'm your host, Dustin Plantholt. Join us as we dive into the world of economics, politics, tech, Bitcoin, and cryptocurrency. For even more crypto-related news, sign up at news.bitcoin.com or follow us on Twitter at Bitcoin.com. Now let's bring on our guest. Welcome to the Recap Show.
Thanks, Dustin. Excited to be here again. I think last week's episode was a lot of fun, and I'm glad to be back. I've got all my notes prepared.
So. That's good, because I can say, and that for the listeners out there that are in this digital asset space, it is all the time. 24/7, there's always something happening. So let's talk about the past week. What has happened in this community, in this ecosystem?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, as in, I could wake up at 4 a.m. and look at my phone and, like, it would be alight, all sorts of notifications of what's going on, sort of thing, which is exciting and exhausting at the same time. Given times we're in, it's on 24/7. I think one of the bigger news that's kind of just expanded from the crypto space to the wider ecosystem or wider industry or a larger amount of people is the whole idea of NFTs. NFTs are non-fungible tokens in the sense that they're unique, which is a little bit different from, let's just say, Bitcoin, which is fungible, right? Like, I send you a Bitcoin, you send me a Bitcoin. It's one and the same thing. It's a piece of code. Obviously, it's represented by everything behind it. But it's fungible, right? Like, you can trade one for the other. What an NFT is, it's a unique piece of code or digital that's tied to digital art, digital music, or anything of that sort that, you know, when a user owns, it's theirs and there's no copying it. It's like, you know, people can take, like a basketball trading card, copy print it in their backyard and then sell it, and it'll just be copying the same thing and it'll just be the same thing. This is like kind of like a unique serial code attached to it that you cannot copy, and it's just that one item that exists. So it's non-fungible in that sense. And I think this week NFTs have made quite a big boom around industry.
You know, the question I have, so walk me through this process. I drew a picture, by the way. So for those of you tuning in, you're not looking at the video, but my artwork is absolutely amazing. So it's called a...
that is great.
NFT.
That is great. We could put that as an NFT and just sell it on the blockchain.
That's what I want to know. So I just drew this amazing stick figure of you. And so what would happen next? So I draw this thing. How do I now sell it?
So what we can do is we can digitize it. So there's tools that allow you to, let's take a picture of it. And when we take a picture of it, we attach it to a blockchain, which gives it a unique serial code, a unique number, and it's recorded within the blockchain. We all know the blockchain is basically a giant database that is unique. You can't go back and change the blocks that have happened. Data has been processed. It's there, permanent, always in history. So an NFT is kind of exactly the same thing, where we'll take that picture, that doodle that you draw, attach it to the blockchain, and that will be tokenized, and I can own it. Nobody else can own it. Nobody else can have a copy of it because it's unique. It's in the blockchain, et cetera. I can pass it on to you, then you'll be the owner of it. But there can't ever be two copies of it. It's just the same as, you know, writing a block on the blockchain, which, you know, has a serial number, has all the data attached to it, cannot be copied. And that's kind of like utilizing the whole premise of what the blockchain really is.
So then what happens? I mean, how do I highlight then that I own this artwork? I mean, there are people that have Picassos and have Monets. I mean, there's entire museums of artwork. So if I buy a piece of artwork on the blockchain, like, how do I tell people I have it, and how do I show other people?
Right. That's actually like a good question, because I think that's the question that I've been asked, and I've asked myself quite a bit, like saying, you know, digital art is great, but you know, it's not in my living room yet. But we are making progress towards, you know, people to start. One of the guys that I know through one of the groups, one of the founders groups, is he's creating a digital screen where you can just within two taps show your NFT on the screen, sort of thing. So it's kind of slowly making its way out of just your browser onto the living room space. But for now, yes, I think you definitely need to be in front of a computer or on a phone to view the piece of art. But I think, you know, the other person, another NFT creator that I was talking to, I'm like, yeah, but isn't that, you know, not how art's supposed to be, et cetera. And he's like, you look at your screen usage and you spend 60% of your time during the week in front of a screen. So, you know, it really doesn't matter if it's on a screen on your phone or on your computer monitor, you're there and you can view it any which way possible. So it is kind of like going through a browser to Etherscan or to one of the blockchain browsers, seeing the piece of code. And there are programs that allow you to view specific NFTs. Now, it's also not just, you know, NFTs aren't just for display purposes. Obviously, it's not just an image or obviously videos and stuff. Those are the more common ones. I think one of the things that it's also used for is music rights, right? Or like, for example, Kings of Leon are releasing NFTs with their album. So their latest album is going to be on the blockchain. There's going to be specific versions of the album sold. And each of those is going to come with a specific ticket, or I think they call it the golden ticket. And that golden ticket will give them backstage access or front seat access when they get into concerts and, you know, all sorts of other material. And that is stuff that you could use the NFT space for, where you can have like really unique, and where you can't go and forge your golden ticket, you know, around the corner sort of thing. It's just specific to the blockchain use case. And yeah, that's how it could expand. Yeah.
Now, does this also help in the world of, I don't know, it could be forgeries, or it could be piracy, where they're stealing somebody's work? Does this protect then the artist?
Yeah, it definitely protects the artist. So if you write your rights, your music rights on the blockchain, and you are the owner of it, nobody else, because it's easily verifiable, right? Like, because this data is A, openly available on the blockchain, and B, it cannot be forged or changed, that gives you as the owner the right to push it, give it to anybody, sell it to anyone, and nobody can copy it or nobody can forge it. And so it reduces piracy quite a bit. And it helps artists in the sense that, you know, some radio station can't just take your song and start playing it and nobody knows where it came from or who owned it or all that sort of stuff. This kind of allows you that entire track of, you know, from source to where it went to and who owns it, et cetera. It's the same as, like, for example, you know, there's projects that we're doing, and one of the biggest use cases of blockchain is, like, you know, for example, in supply chain. So there's a project called VeChain that built chips, and these chips are attached to clothing material or, you know, food or food packaging or anything of the sort that you can trace all the way to the source. So if you get a Louis Vuitton bag in, I think they're partnered with Louis Vuitton with a few others, actually. If you get a Louis Vuitton at a mall, you can actually scan the chip and see, okay, so this has been through this journey, this port where it was checked, this is the factory that it was built, and this is a chip authorized by Louis Vuitton itself. It's not just knockoff that's come around. So that's kind of like also an NFT sort of use case. And that's like a blockchain use case as well.
So this really does solve many billion dollar over problems that every single country on the face of the earth is dealing with.
It does. I think the whole NFT space within the art and media side, definitely brings it a lot closer to the retail individual, right? Like, obviously, there is the entire crypto ecosystem. There's Bitcoin trading, and there's all this sort of technical stuff that happens. I'd say, quote unquote, stuff. All these technicals that go within the industry, and you know, you have to kind of really learn a lot about it to interact with it, etc. But I think when that ecosystem is kind of growing, but not growing fast enough. But I think this side of NFTs, which is a lot more understandable, a lot more easily comprehensible by individuals, about music rights, about art rights, about the fact that it's non-fungible, about the fact that it's unique, and the usability of it that brings it to people. I think this will really kind of expand the whole blockchain ecosystem even further.
So now, if the technology side is advancing or the use case is advancing, then explain why I see such a volatile market, and how do digital assets come into play with the blockchain?
So the volatile market is digital assets in the blockchain. Again, you know, it's the idea of the blockchain is it's against being centrally controlled. It's owned by the users within it. And it's like a massively open database that anybody can trace and track everything. I think the volatility that you see in the market now, you know, just kind of comes from various markets. Like, we're moving into every market is dependent upon each other, so to speak. Bitcoin's dependent upon how FX is doing, for example. Bitcoin is also dependent upon how miners are doing, for example. So the volatility you see could be a result of government action of certain sorts, or it could be a result of company actions of sorts. So it depends on what kind of volatility we try to see and what we're using it to explain what uses or what causes, essentially.
Now, that's a great way of explaining it. And last week I'd asked you, like, are we at the stage now with this ecosystem or with this asset class where, you know, someone comes in and sells 1,000 Bitcoin, and is it going to completely disrupt the entire market? And you basically said, no, it's not going to put the kind of debt you think it will. So now we're seeing the market is maturing, where we're seeing these cycles that are happening, which is now creating more investor interest. Talk about this Kraken IPO, rumor we're hearing about.
Yeah, no, the Kraken IPO is very interesting. I think Jesse's been a long-term bastion of the crypto space since the early days. I think he was the first one that came about and helped out the Mt. Gox debacle as well. But yeah, he was just on TV recently talking about the potential for a Kraken IPO. Like, they did a private fundraise a year and a half ago, but I think they're looking to IPO now, right after, obviously it comes right after Coinbase IPO'd, has already filed for IPO. I think they'll list soon. I think it's really good for the industry as a whole.
I think that really is. So do you see that there's going to be other players entering this space at some point in the future? Again, a Fidelity, for instance. Do you think a Fidelity, the type of that kind of company, would ever launch their own buy and hold platform or crypto exchange, whatever you want to call it?
Not really, because I think given companies like Fidelity and BlackRock, for example, that I used to work at, they are in the process, or they're in the business of managing assets rather than creating a platform for the assets to be traded. So it'll be like a little departure from their existing businesses. But I think somebody like, the company, the CBOE or CME, for example, as an example of the Chicago Merchant Exchange that runs its own exchange, they could start a cryptocurrency trading exchange sort of thing. But I think it will definitely be where, the main business of these guys are running an exchange. But I think Fidelity, BlackRock, Tower Research, all these guys, that manage assets on users and companies' behalf, they will be entering the space where they will be holding Bitcoin and other, like, for example, the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, for example, which is a legal way of people to get Bitcoin exposure. They will definitely enter the space by increasing the holdings on it, but I don't see them opening up exchanges, because that's an entirely different business on its own.
Now, crypto banks, do you see that happening in the near future, where some of the larger banks will allow you to move your digital assets and be managed, I assume, then in their system or in their database?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so, right? Like, as in, it's a use case that everybody's been crying out about. I know people are looking to solve it. I know Kraken got their own banking license. Kraken already kind of has a blend of, you know, trading FX markets and trading crypto at the same thing, in the same terminal. And eventually, I hope they will get into banking. But I think, you know, some player that bridges. Is, and I know people are obviously, it's an age old problem to solve, where how do you legally get you know, your USDT or USDC or your Bitcoin translated into actual fiat that's sitting in your bank account, sort of thing. Now, the other flip side of that is, like, I'm a believer where I should just be able to spend my digital dollar instead of having to convert it to fiat, right? Like, now that's my that's kind of like how, you know, I would go around and I would pay using BCH, like Bitcoin Cash. Like, I'll be in the pub. There's multiple. I mean, the team at Bitcoin.com has done such a great job of converting actual merchants into crypto accepting merchants. So I can actually just go and spend BCH in, like, a BrewDog, which is like a pub in London. Now that is where I would definitely want to progress to, where everybody just takes crypto and can transact in it. So you won't really need a bank. But those who still prefer fiat and would rather have actual hard cash, then yeah, I think it's a product that needs to come to market, and I'm sure somebody will come with it in 2021.
And as we come shortly to the close, you know, why are these top traders around the world, or at least what I've been reading online, that they're waiting for the Feds to take on bond yields, or at least to see what the federal government is going to do with bonds? Why does that impact this asset class, this new and young, vibrant, growing asset class? Why is it affecting it in any way?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was alluded to for that, like, you know, Bitcoin's volatility is obviously dependent upon a bunch of external factors. I think one of the biggest factors is obviously the US dollar. The dollar being the reserve currency in the world, you know, everywhere you go, Bitcoin's denominated in dollar. Like, nobody looks at it in the pound price, the euro price, whatever. So you can see, like, a big correlation with the dollar itself. And everybody's eyes are on Jerome Powell, or Jay Powell, as everybody calls him, because he's the one who decides what rates are going to be set, what interest rates are going to be set, what yields are going to be set. And I think when yields are high, and when, you know, when there is more interest that's going to be generated on holding the dollar, so to speak, that means the dollar is a very strong asset. And when the dollar is a strong asset, that means Bitcoin in and of itself becomes a lot more expensive. So when yields go up, that means the dollar is stronger. That means dollar has more purchasing power. That means that Bitcoin, in and of fact, because it's denominated in a dollar primarily, seems more expensive. So people will sell it, or people will naturally just flow from crypto, from the crypto side all the way to the fiat side. So DXY, which is the dollar index, as that goes up, people will flock to a dollar because yields are bigger. More corporates will kind of take their assets and put it into higher yielding assets on the dollar side, sort of thing. So you will see, like, a flight of capital, right? So because if one FX currency is stronger, people will flock to it, not just in the US, but globally, obviously. And that means that capital has to flow from one side to the other. So that's why people watch, people are actually, I think Jerome Powell is supposed to be on soon, actually, this morning. So yeah, when bond yields are higher, that means holding the dollar and sticking it in a bond is much better. That means Bitcoin, but that means the dollar is stronger. That means Bitcoin just automatically becomes more expensive. And to level that out, you know, people would sell Bitcoin, and or the price level will go down. Is that going to make it kind of easier to understand, sort of thing?
Yeah, that's a great one. Thank you, Donis. You did that for me. So I finally understand. I go, I had, like, yeah, for those tuning in, like you probably had your aha moment a few times on today's special recap. So looking into your crystal ball, man, looking into the future, what do you think is going to happen next week when we come back together? What do you think the talk or the chatter will be?
Good question. I think March in and of itself is historically been a a volatile month. I think everybody saw what happened in March 2020, when everything just dipped. Bitcoin went down to 3,000, and I think the rest of the market kind of tanked with it. This was obviously, as soon as the virus kind of scare kind of happened. But previously as well, March has always been a volatile month, mainly because of tax season and all globally and primarily in the U.S. And I think people kind of move their assets around. So I think there you will obviously generally see a lot of volatility around this month. So I think, you know, we're still going strong in the crypto side of things. I think we're still hovering around the 49, 51K mark. I think by next week, we might be around these levels, but there will definitely be a little bit more volatility. But I think next week, hopefully, we'll be discussing a lot more that happens more on the macroeconomic scale, because I think that's the time of the year right now.
Thank you again for coming on The Recap Show.
Thank you for having me.
You've listened to another episode of the Bitcoin.com podcast. Subscribe at news.bitcoin.com, where your journey begins.